Okay, picture this. A 40-year-old crashes into the ED, excruciating epigastric pain, straight through the back, nausea, vomiting. Vitals are a huge red flag. Heart rate 130, BP 90, 60, he's sledding buckets. What's your very first move? Like immediately. And for rapid severity assessment, what's the one critical lab you're checking right now that hints how bad this is, even before the amylase is back?
Wow. Yeah, that's a pulse racing scenario, and it really underscores how fast you need to think. Your immediate first move, absolutely, is ABC stabilize that patient. Airway, breathing, circulation first. And for that immediate severity clue, you're looking at things like a rising BUN or maybe hematocrit. They give you such a critical early read on, you know, their systemic inflammation and how much fluid they've lost internally, often way before the lipase result even hits the chart.
Totally. Those early clues are vital. And speaking of rapid assessment, welcome to 88 Diagnoses. Today, we are diving deep into acute pancreatitis management. When a patient like that lands on your service, you need a solid game plan, right? For assessing severity, figuring out what needs immediate attention, for you residents listening, we've got a framework. FPN Fix Patient Now. It's all about that early recognition and getting interventions started.
Right. And what's really key here is starting with that initial picture, but then constantly reassessing severity. The core principles, they really boil down to a few things. Figuring out how sick they are, getting those early IV fluids going to perfuse the pancreas, controlling pain, supporting nutrition, and yeah, definitely finding and treating the cause and any complications that pop up.
So it's not just, okay, they have pancreatitis. It's about quickly sorting out who's, you know, kind of okay versus who's really teetering on the edge. How do we actually classify that severity?
Exactly. We mainly classify by severity. So that helps us predict what might happen and guides how we manage them. So mild acute pancreatitis, that means no organ failure, no local or systemic complications. These folks usually do pretty well. Then there's moderately severe. These are patients with transient organ failure, meaning it gets better within 48 hours, or they develop local issues like fluid collections and severe. This is the big one. Persistent organ failure lasting more than 48 hours. We're talking shock, respiratory failure, kidney failure. Or you can use the modified Marshall score if it's two or more in any of those key systems, cardiovascular, respiratory, or renal.
Okay, that difference between transient and persistent organ failure, that sounds absolutely critical. And the modified Marshall score helps kind of formalize that assessment.
It does, yeah. And, you know, besides severity, we also have this morphology-based classification, the revised Atlanta classification. It basically describes what the pancreas looks like. Interstitial edematous pancreatitis. That's just inflammation. No dead tissue, no necrosis, usually lines up with mild disease, versus necrotizing pancreatitis. Here you've got inflammation plus necrosis, dead tissue in or around the pancreas. This one often tracks with moderately severe and severe disease.
Got it. So patient rolls in. How are we really assessing this in those first, say, critical few days? What are the absolute must-have labs you're watching like a hawk?
Well, you're constantly looking for signs of organ failure, any local problems, systemic issues, especially in that crucial first 72 hours. That helps you flag patients needing more aggressive fluids, close monitoring, maybe even the ICU, labs, definitely a CBC, a CMP, CRP is helpful in lactate. And here's a really key on the wards tip. Check these at least every 24 hours for the first few days. You got to track the trends. Single numbers don't tell the whole story.
Right. And here's something absolutely crucial to burn into your brain, especially for rounds and definitely for boards. Checking amylase and lipase over and over again is not useful to assess severity or predict prognosis. They're for diagnosis, period. Once you know it's pancreatitis, stop checking those for severity. Okay, pop quiz time. Pause and think. Quick, can you name the three key organ systems in the modified Marshall score that define severe pancreatitis? Give yourself 10 seconds. Think big, vital functions, the ones you track in anyone critically ill. Go.
And knowing that helps you figure out who needs that higher level of care, right? Patients with severe acute pancreatitis, obviously, but also those who don't quite meet the severe definition but have really worrying signs like pulse under 40 or way over 150, systolic BP under 80, breathing super fast, like over 35 breaths a minute, crazy electrolytes. You also have to think harder about patients with persistent seroZS, that's a systemic inflammatory response syndrome. Things like fever, fast heart rate, fast breathing, high white count, especially if it's hanging around for more than 48 hours. High hematocrit or BUN, rising creatinine, being older than 60, or having underlying heart or lung problems, those all push you towards more intensive monitoring.
Oh man, I remember my intern year, I got totally burned on this. Missed subtle signs that a patient I thought was mild was actually developing severe pancreatitis, didn't reevaluate closely enough. the big takeaway. If they aren't clearly getting better in 48, 72 hours, you have to think about getting a CT scan to look for complications. Seriously, don't delay that reassessment. It's a huge part of our FPN framework, Fix Patient Now. Okay, let's wrap segment one. Burn this into your brain. Severity assessment in acute pancreatitis is dynamic. It changes, especially in the first 72 hours. Focus on the clinical signs, look for organ failure, track the trends, don't get fixated on just the enzyme levels. All right, we've nailed down assessment basics. Now let's shift gears into what we call ward wins, those early moves that really make a difference for your patients with acute pancreatitis. This is where we dive into the FEAAN of our mnemonic FPN Fix Patient Now. And we're starting with F for fluids.
Fluids are absolutely key, and there's been a real shift here. We now strongly recommend lactated Ringer's solution over normal saline for most patients. Why? Well, meta-analyses have shown LR can actually reduce how long patients stay in the hospital and even their risk of needing the ICU.
Interesting. So not just any fluid.
Exactly. The main exception is if the pancreatitis is caused by hypercalcemia, then you'd use normal saline because, you know, LR has calcium in it.
Makes sense. And what about the amount of fluid? I feel like that's changed too.
Totally. We now recommend moderate intravenous hydration. That usually means an initial bolus, maybe 10 milliliters per kilo if they look volume down, followed by about 1.5 millimolars per kilo per hour. This definitely move away from the really aggressive fluid strategies we used to see. There's a big study of the waterfall trial that showed aggressive resuscitation like a 20 millimolar per kilo bolus, then 3 millimolar per kilo per hour led to way more fluid overload, like 20% versus only 6% in the moderate group. That's a massive difference in complications.
Wow. Okay. So that's a crucial ward win right there. Avoid drowning them. Less can be more, but it needs to be targeted.
And the timing is just as important. Giving the right amount of fluid early, ideally within that first 24 hours, is consistently linked to better outcomes, less morbidity, lower mortality. If you wait too long, you just don't see the same benefit. And here's a super practical on-the-wards tip for managing fluids. Reassess your patient constantly, like every few hours in the first 6 hours, and then keep a close eye over the next 24 to 48 hours. How do you know if it's enough? Look for improving vitals heart rate coming down under 120, MAP in that 65-85 range, good urine output like 0.5 to 1 mmol per kilo per hour, and hopefully seeing the hematocrit and BUN come down over 24 hours if they were high to start. Actually, a rising BUN in those first 24 hours. That's a really bad sign. Predicts mortality.
And here's a huge pitfall alert, another on the wards tip. Do not just keep slamming fluids after the first 48 hours. Being too aggressive with fluids later on is linked to a higher risk of respiratory failure, kidney problems, even abdominal compartment syndrome. It's about smart, goal-directed therapy, not just volume for volume's sake. Okay, moving on to the PNR-FPN framework, pain control. Obviously, we don't want patients suffering. That pain can be horrific, but we need to be smart about managing it.
Absolutely. And while treating the pain directly is important for comfort and even hemodynamics, it's worth remembering that getting enough fluids in that adequate fluid resuscitation we just talked about is often the first priority for the pain, especially if hypovolemia is making things worse, like causing ischemic pain. For mild pain, you might use oral opioids, maybe NSAIDs if there are no contraindications, like kidney issues or bleeding risk. For moderate to severe pain, you'll likely need parenteral opioids. Hydromorphone or fentanyl are used a lot now. Fentanyl is often preferred because it's got a better safety profile, especially if kidney function is iffy. You might give like 20 to 50 mics as a bolus with a 10-minute lockout on a PCA.
Yeah.
Meperidine. Yeah, we almost never use that anymore. Too many downsides.
Right. Good riddance to meperidine. Okay, and that brings us to the end in FPN nutrition. Getting the gut working seems like another really key ward win.
Oh, definitely. The guiding principle now is feed the gut early if you can, either orally or via enteral tube, to help maintain the gut lining. For patients with mild pancreatitis, if they're not nauseous, not vomiting, don't have an ileus, they can often start eating pretty quickly, maybe within 24 hours. And starting with a solid low-fat diet early seems safe and maybe even beneficial.
That feels so counterintuitive to the old NPO gut rest thinking, doesn't it?
It really does. That's a major learning point. Now, for the sicker patients, moderately severe or severe pancreatitis, if they can't eat within about 5 to 7 days, they definitely need nutritional support. And here's the crucial part. Enteral feeding is strongly preferred over parenteral nutrition, or TPN.
Why is that?
Well, enteral feeding helps keep the gut barrier intact. It might prevent bacteria from translocating out of the gut, and you avoid all the complications that come with TPN, like line infections and liver issues. I mean, multiple big meta-analyses show enteral nutrition cuts down on mortality, organ failure, systemic infections, even the need for surgery compared to TPN. It's a huge difference.
Wow. Okay, I have to share this. I remember having this patient with necrotizing pancreatitis, kept them NPO and then on TPN for like a week because we were so paranoid about stimulating the pancreas, the whole gut rest thing. Total mistake in retrospect. Learned the hard way that early enteral feeding is a massive ward win. Waiting is often actually worse.
Exactly. And you can usually use a nasogastric tube, which is easier to place, or maybe a nasojournal tube if you want to be theoretical about bypassing the pancreas more. Start with a standard polymeric formula, low rate, like 25 cc an hour, and just advance it as they tolerate.
All right, time to engage that brain again. Pause and think. Quick, name one concrete sign of fluid overload you'd be actively looking for when you're titrating IV fluids and checking your patient's volume status. Think bedside exam. Okay, wrapping up segment two, burn this into your brain. Aggressive early fluid resuscitation with lactated ringers is vital, yes, but pivot. Switch to moderate, goal-directed therapy after 24, 48 hours to avoid drowning them. And get them eating early, preferably enterally. It makes a huge difference in outcomes. All right, team, time for a case clash, because let's be real, things don't always go smoothly on the wards, right? We've covered our FPN fixed patient now framework for that acute phase, but what happens when complications arise or when you really need to dig into the underlying cause?
Yeah, complications are common, especially more severe pancreatitis. Identifying them often means getting a contrast-enhanced CT scan. We usually save this for patients with moderately severe or severe disease, or if someone's just not getting better, showing signs of sepsis, or actually deteriorating after about 72 hours.
And what kind of local complications are we looking for?
Well, you can see things like acute peripancreatic fluid collections, or APFCs. These often just resolve on their own. Then there are acute necrotic collections, ANCs, basically dead tissue that hasn't walled off yet. Later, you might see pancreatic pseudocysts, which are encapsulated fluid collections, actually kind of rare now, or walled off necrosis, one that's mature, encapsulated dead tissue.
And the one everyone dreads, infected necrosis. How do we spot that, and what's the game plan?
Yeah, infected necrosis is definitely a major concern. You got to suspect it if your patient starts going downhill. New instability, signs of sepsis, white count climbing, fevers, especially if it's like 7 to 10 days into their illness. Sometimes you see gas bubbles within the necrosis on imaging, which is a pretty strong sign.
Yeah.
If you suspect it based on clinical signs, maybe with gas on CT, that's usually enough to start empiric antibiotics. Think broad coverage, like piperacillin tazobactam, or maybe cefepime plus metronidazole, or even a carbapenem.
Okay. Antibiotics for suspected infection. But what about just giving them preventatively?
Great question. Here's a crucial on-the-words tip, a real ruthless cut. Prophylactic antibiotics, giving them just in case, are not recommended for acute pancreatitis if there's no clear sign of infection. Doesn't matter if it's interstitial or necrotizing, mild or severe. Save the big guns for when you actually think there's an infection brewing.
Got it. No prophylaxis. So if you do suspect or confirm infected necrosis and start antibiotics, what's next? Drain it, cut it out.
Here's where it gets interesting. The key insight often is actually to wait if you can. If the patient is stable or even improving on antibiotics after maybe 48, 72 hours, we really try to delay any intervention like drainage or surgical debridement, necrosectomy, for at least 2 to 4 weeks, sometimes longer.
Wait, why wait if it's infected?
Because waiting allows the necrotic collection to wall off or mature. Trying to drain or debride early when it's just inflamed mush leads to way more complications, more bleeding, more fistulas. If you wait until there's a more defined wall, the procedures are safer and often more effective. We generally favor a step-up approach, now start minimally invasive, like endoscopic drainage through the stomach or duodenum or percutaneous drainage with radiology guidance. If that doesn't work, maybe then video-assisted retroperitoneal debridement or laparoscopic surgery. Open necrosectomy is really rare these days.
Okay, so the mantra for stable infected necrosis is often delay and drain minimally invasively later. What about sterile necrosis, though? No infection.
Right. If it's sterile necrosis, and that's mostly a clinical diagnosis based on them not looking septic, then usually no antibiotics are needed and definitely no prophylactic intervention. You'd only intervene later, maybe after 4 weeks or more, if they're having persistent symptoms because of the collection itself, like ongoing pain, inability to eat, stomach, or bile duct obstruction.
So sometimes the most aggressive move is patience. Fascinating. Any other complications we should watch for?
Yeah, a couple others. Splanchnic venous thrombosis, clots in the veins draining the gut, like the splenic vein, portal vein, or SMV, often found incidentally on CT. You'd usually anticoagulate if the clot extends into the portal or superior mesenteric vein, but maybe not for just an isolated splenic vein clot. And then there's abdominal compartment syndrome, high pressure inside the belly. causing organ failure. You need to monitor for that in the ICU, often with serial bladder pressure measurements, if the intra-abdominal pressure stays over 20 mmHg and there's new organ dysfunction.
Okay, managing complications is huge. But what about preventing recurrence by tackling the underlying cause, especially gallstones?
Absolutely critical. For gallstone pancreatitis, ERCP. If the patient has cholangitis infection in the bile ducts, you need to do an ERCP urgently, like within 24 to 48 hours. If they don't have cholangitis, but there's evidence of ongoing blockage, like a stone seen on imaging, a dilated bile duct, or worsening liver tests, then a non-urgent ERCP might be reasonable. But importantly, ERCP is generally not needed for mild gallstone pancreatitis or even severe cases if there's no cholangitis or ongoing obstruction. Many stones pass on their own. On the wart's tip, watch the liver test closely. If the LFTs are improving significantly over the first day or two, the stone likely passed. And you often don't need more imaging or ERCP unless you still have high suspicion. If they're getting worse, then, yeah, investigate further with MRCP or maybe US cholecystectomy. This is non-negotiable. Taking the gallbladder out needs to happen after the patient recovers from the pancreatitis episode, ideally before they leave the hospital if it was mild. Why? Because the risk of having another attack is really high, like 25-30% if you leave a gallbladder full of stones in there.
Okay, so cholecystectomy for everyone with gallstone pancreatitis, even if they had an ERCP and sphincterotomy.
Yes, even then. The sphincterotomy helps stones pass from the bile duct, but it doesn't stop stones from forming in the gallbladder and causing future trouble. Now, the timing of the cholecystectomy matters. For mild pancreatitis, doing it during the same hospital stay is usually safe. But for necrotizing pancreatitis, it's generally better to wait, do an interval cholecystectomy after the inflammation, and any collections have calmed down or resolved, maybe weeks or months later. There's actually a warning here for the warts. Be careful about operating too soon if you suspect unrecognized necrotizing pancreatitis, maybe based on a high white count and SIRS criteria. Operating during the same admission in those cases seems to lead to worse outcomes.
Man, I saw that happen once. Patient had gallstone pancreatitis, got an urgent ERCP for cholangitis, totally saved their bacon, but then discharged without a plan for cholecystectomy. Weeks later, bam, back with another attack. Don't be that resident who forgets the definitive step. Get the gallbladder out. All right, pause and think again. You have a patient with necrotizing pancreatitis. They are stable, no signs of infection. CT confirms a sterile necrotic collection. What's your initial management approach regarding intervention? Think about what we just discussed regarding timing and sterility.
And just quickly on other causes, if it's alcohol, brief intervention and counseling are key. If it's high triglycerides or high calcium, you treat those underlying issues. If it's a medication, you stop the drug. Hmm. Pretty straightforward, but crucial to address.
Okay, let's lock in the learning for this segment. Burn this into your brain. Recognize complications, especially infected necrosis, but remember, for stable patients, the approach is often conservative management first and delayed intervention, preferably minimally invasive. And always, always ensure you manage the underlying cause, like getting that cholecystectomy for gallstone pancreatitis to stop it from happening again. Hashtag interactive case study, pulse racing diagnostic puzzle. All right, residents, pencils sharp, brains engaged. Time to put yourself in the hot seat with a real 88 diagnoses diagnostic puzzle.
Let's go. Here's a case. A 68-year-old male, known history of heavy alcohol use, comes in with severe epigastric pain, nausea, vomiting for 2 days. His initial labs show lipase way up, over 3 times the upper limit of normal. White count is 18,000. Hematocrit is high at 48%. BUN is 25. Vitals. He's tachycardic at 130. And hypotensive, BP 9060.
Okay, prompt one. Based just on that initial presentation, what's your immediate concern about his pancreatitis severity? What signs are worrying you? And what is your absolute top priority intervention right now? Think FPN. Say it out loud or jot it down. What are you doing first? Okay, curveball time. What if one, let's say you jump on it, give aggressive initial fluids based on those vitals, but over the next 24 hours, despite his heart rate improving down to 110, his BUN climbs to 35 mmHg and his urine output tanks. What is that telling you about his actual volume status and maybe his kidney function? And what's your very next step? Think about fluid goals and reassessment. All right, what if two? Fast forward 3 weeks, he's clinically stable now, eating solids okay, but still getting these intermittent flares of pain. You get a repeat CT scan, it shows a well-defined 6 cm fluid collection, looks like it has some necrotic debris inside, definitely walled off. But critically, he has no fever and his white blood cell count is normal. Is this infected necrosis? And what's the recommended management approach for this kind of collection right now? One more twist. What if three? Let's rewind and imagine this patient actually had gallstone pancreatitis, not alcohol related. You managed his acute episode. He did well. Maybe he had some sterile necrosis that resolved. What is the absolute critical next step you need to take to prevent this from happening again? And considering he had that resolved collection, when would you ideally perform that next step? Hashtag memory blast recap. Okay, drill sergeant recap. Time to lock this in. Burn these points into your brain. Assess severity fast. Focus on organ failure, clinical signs, trends, not just enzymes. Fluids. Start with LR. Moderate amount. Goal-directed therapy. Fluids. Hydrate early, first 24 hours are key, but don't overdo it after 48 hours. Get them eating early, use the gut. Enteral is best. Remember, FPN. Fix patient now. Get them eating early, use the gut. Enteral is best. Remember, sterile pancreatitis. No prophylactic antibiotics. Get them eating early, use the gut. Enteral is best. Remember, infected necrosis. If stable, delay intervention. Step up approach later. Get them eating early, use the gut. Enteral is best. Remember, gallstone pancreatitis, ERCP only if needed for cholangitis obstruction. Shill a cystectomy for everyone eventually. Get the meeting early, use the gut. Enteral is best. Remember, hashtag outro and call to action. Woo! That was a high-octane deep dive into acute pancreatitis management here on 88 Diagnoses. You've got the knowledge. You've got the framework, FPN. Now go hit the wards. Try out one new tip you learned today. Quiz yourself on FPN tonight on call. And hey, DM us your clus moments managing pancreatitis or even your epic fails we learned from those too. Find us at 88 Diagnoses. Stay sharp out there, residents.